Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the 2152 Project. It's been a minute since we've recorded. And just in case you don't know who we are, the 2152 Project is actually meant to determine and to communicate the distance in miles between myself and Mike, not the number of days between episodes. So we've got a good reason, not an excuse. We've got a good reason why we haven't been back for a while, but excited to be back with you, Mike. Excited to get back and to kind of, I've missed doing these podcasts, missed doing these episodes, but super excited to be back with you.
Hey, same here. I mean, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
I agree with you. It's not how many days or how many miles between us, or I just messed up the whole thing. But we have taken a long time. We're rusty. Let's do this.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
My thing is, Jason, you know, real fast, if it's okay, I just want to catch up with you and see what's new in the world of Georgia and work-based learning. And catch everyone up on some of the successes you've had. And I mean, I've been watching from a distance and it has been amazing.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. We haven't really counted those days, but since our last episode, and I'll speak to it again, because I mean, you know me, I don't want to be someone who flashes merit and talks a lot about awards, because you can't really control that stuff. But we talked about it in a pre-planning episode. We will bring it up here just because I think it shows the value of a shift in career tech ed. And so we were talking, I was after our last episode in the summer of 20, oh gosh, I can't remember the dates. We'll skip the dates and just say, basically I was nominated for Georgia's ACT Teacher of the Year, won that, and then went to region two, ACT's region two, which is basically the southeastern 11 states and territories. So there's not 11 states, but the territories as well. And then won that and was named a finalist for National Teacher of the Year, and was able to participate in that, and didn't bring that one home, but was very honored to do so. I think the value there is the fact that a work-based learning coordinator, that our umbrella organization, because if you remember, you know, we just became an actual division 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, we're one of the only divisions to have started as a new and related services section, and then to grow enough members to become a division. And we're the only division inside of ACT that has our own standalone conference. So things are moving, and people are starting to see that work-based learning is a viable product. It's not just a, hey, how can we take what we're doing and make it look like work-based learning, which is what a lot of people do. It's how can we actually do work-based learning? And the fact that I was able to kind of carry that banner all the way through that process, and it made me feel really good. It made me feel like, you know, the grassroots efforts, the things that you and I have done, the work-based learning on the 2152 Project, and are going to continue doing, and other, you know, really well-known podcasts like, you know, Peter Hostrosser and Ali Dahl on their district education and podcast, and things that Christy Valesky is doing in with her consulting company. I mean, things are happening and people are taking notice, and that's really, really exciting. And more than those awards is also the recognition of contribution to things. So since last episode, I've also been asked to sit on two advisory panels. One is the America Institute for Research, the AIR, their CTE Research Network 2.0, to help kind of look through and kind of give advice on their future research, which is going to be driving specifically work-based learning and career tech ed. And then just recently, Jobs for the Future is basically sought out, and it's called the CNPAC, which is Career Navigation Practitioners Advisory Council. And that's just people who are involved in helping people navigate careers and in that education area. And so sitting on that, those two things I'm really proud of, because it's not about accomplishments. It's just about people saying, hey, here's what you're putting into the ether of education. And we value that. We want to put that and hone that to further research, to further career practitioner and curriculum development and a lot of stuff. So some really, really interesting things going on with me. So thank you for asking. What about you? How are things different? How are things grown? What's happening in the world of My Castle?
Oh boy, oh boy. There's been so much that's taken place over the last little while. My daughter, she graduated high school, then my son graduates high school. My daughter, she had a tumor that we had to take care of, and that was, that took some time. And then work-based learning in Utah, we've kind of run into a situation where we need to figure out really how to show the value of the classroom as well. And so if the students are going online, then it does affect the ability to fund the classrooms. And so we've actually shifted our work-based learning focus a little bit on how we recruit and do those type of things, so we can make sure that we're helping the employers, but we're also making sure the students are getting those hands-on experiences to prepare for it. And in Utah, there's been, and we'll talk about this maybe down the road today, but we kind of were on the chopping block at some point. We, as it turned
Work
out,
based learning.
work-based learning
Oh,
as a
wow.
state. And it wasn't because of we weren't doing anything right. We were doing a lot of things right, but the problem is we were also not sharing it. We weren't collecting the data, and we weren't telling the story. And so this year we're going to be focusing on that just a little bit. And then for me personally, I was looking at, when is it time for me to walk? And I've got some adventures in the future I'm looking at. And so this will be my final dance, the last dance this year. And I just wanted one last run where I could just, soak this all in. I've learned so much in the time that I've been doing what I've been doing. And I just thought, man, I just need one more year just to soak it in, just appreciate all the good that we've done. And have those chances to hang out with my boy, Mr. Jason. And I'll tell you, I'm very excited for this upcoming year.
That is so leaving education sector, moving into private sector is what's on the tap for you. So I think our listeners can kind of see a little bit about why we've had this hiatus. Like you mentioned some personal things with your family, daughter, and then on my side, some of the part of the reason we've been gone, and we don't want to belabor this, but this has happened twice now. We had a smaller break a couple of years ago, because of some bad weather, and then it just seems like my community is beginning to get a bunch of that bad weather. Last year we had two hurricanes. One of those, we got the Eastern Eyewall. I can't even remember which one because there's been so many, it seems like. But we were out of school for almost a month. We got, I believe it was Idalia. We got the Eastern Eyewall. Maybe it was Helene. I can't remember. It was one of those two. But like the worst part of the storm, like I think 5 miles to the east of us or the west of us was the eye. And when you're on the right side of that, that's the fastest winds, the most damage. And I mean, it just absolutely destroyed our community and our neighboring communities, and schools were out power. I mean, we were out of power for 2, 3 weeks. And so it just was one of those things where, your personal issues, the family, my community issues. Just as much as we love doing this, it just wasn't in the cards. So that's what we'll say about that. I'm not gonna belabor that point. But just say to our audience, thank you for those of who sent us messages. Hey, when's the next content coming out? I really do value that. We thank you for the encouragement, and we are back. We're gonna keep doing some episodes. We got a lot of things to talk about moving forward. I guess the thing I would say is just moving forward, that those personal struggles that you and I went through, familially, community wise. Really just kind of paint a picture of the value of work-based learning. Our communities are, a lot of our industries and employers have maybe some struggle and with this talent pipeline, some struggle with these workforce issues. And we are able to come in and talk about this and kind of set up that model of resilience and not doing what you've always done, but trying new things. And work-based learning is definitely a program that requires resilience. You get a lot of no's from industry. You do a lot of cold calling. If sometimes I feel like a salesman, and I kind of try to tell people, "Hey, look, I don't get paid anymore. Whether you take 100 of my kids or none of my kids, I'm a state employee." But that resilience is key, and so I'm glad to have that underscore and be basically the foundation for our future episodes this year, moving forward. So that's why the hiatus. So let's talk a little bit about where work-based learning is now. And you mentioned something I want to talk about. The tell me a little bit more about this data thing, and and how programs, because I mean, and you won't say this because you're humble, but I will. Utah is one of the more formidable powerhouses in work-based learning across the country. Like, you guys aren't new to the game. You have an established success record. I mean, you've got U-Science in your backyard, who's also playing in that same space. You've got a state contract with them. You're doing great things. Tell me, how in the world does work-based learning end up anywhere close to the chopping block? How does that happen?
I remember thinking it was a typo, as you follow, what's going on up north. And as they're looking, excuse me, I apologize. As they're looking at funding, and they're looking at, okay, where can we get the most bang for our buck? They have to look at, where everything's going. And as I look at work-based learning, just the data that was being collected just wasn't enough to wet the whistle. And so it really did take an 11th hour push by U-Science and by other people in Utah, where they could go and basically say, here's what's happening in work-based learning. And to my understanding, I'm really watering this response down, but there's but it's essentially then how comes you haven't been showing that? Like, this is amazing. And so it was just seeing in the short time that we're able to collectively put together, why work-based learning and what, why it's important and what we're doing, it really, really boils down to, you've got to be able to tell the story. And even though we're all doing great things individually, we just haven't collectively done a great job telling the story as the entire state of Utah. And so this upcoming year, there's going to be that focus. And for anybody who's involved in sales or recruiting or anything like that, most decisions are made by two. It boils down to two things. One is, can you take away my pain? And the other one is, can you increase my pleasure? And so the pleasure
I like
portion
that.
is, that's why people over, that's why they over pay for a house. It's because they have like their dream home. And they're like, hey, man, I want this house with this fence, this lot, this view. And they will overpay because they're chasing the pleasure of the purchase. And then, to me, it makes no sense to pay a real estate agent, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. But at the end of the day, it does, because, it's like, take this pain off of me. I'll sell my house. And so that's kind of the focus this year, is we need to be able to tell the story, tell and hit those pleasure. The pleasure sensors for those up north that need that. But then also, when they're saying, look, our pocketbook, our money, we've got to be very accountable to this, and you guys are causing us pain because you're not collecting the data good enough, then we need to be able to tell that story better as
You're
well.
not
So,
helping us tell your story.
yeah.
You're not telling our story. And if you're not telling us your story, we can't tell it as a means of
Yeah.
justification for continuing to fund it.
Exactly.
So we've had this conversation before on this podcast, and I know you've and I've had it, in other areas, in other podcasts and other presentations, across the country, is we've always said that it's time for us to switch our language. And the way you recruit business partners is by speaking industry. And we've talked about changing language, changing, not talking that educational alphabet soup, just bombard them with acronyms, right? But tell them, here's the actual value of hiring a work-based learning student. You shared with me a pretty cool resource a couple of years ago that you can go in and actually see the quantify, not qualify, quantify, put numbers to the value of an intern. And you shared that resource with me, and I've used it before numerous times. But and that's all about us telling our story to industry. Why should you hire our students? How are we a viable solution to your critical labor shortages? Giving you access to talent early. We did a whole series on access to talent, talent retention, talent pipelines. I mean, we first started this podcast, but what you're saying now is we need to shift that to not only change our language and tell our story so that industry understands us. Now we need to add another layer of that and make sure that we're collecting the right data to tell the right story so that our legislators
Yes,
understand this. And
100%.
that's a substantial shift because, I haven't talked about that. I've talked about including legislators on my advisory panel and my advisory board, my board of directors. But there needs to be some pretty heavy hitters in our industry who are going up to Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
Maybe our work-based learning divisions, need to hire some lobbyists to go up there to the Capitol Hill and start lobbying for, and that's going to have to happen at the state level because, as we all know, what's happening with the Department of Education at the federal level, it's being deconstructed and taken apart, whether you agree or disagree with that. This is no longer going to happen at the federal level. This is going to have to be that grassroots effort, which is why what the 2152 project is, the grassroots effort to start not only advocating for and wagging our tails, so to speak. It's our dog that won't wag his own tail. Tell our story to industry, but we have to start also telling it to our legislators, because if we don't give them viable means to say, here's what our money's doing, and they can't point to talent pipelines, or they can't. And so give me an example. What would you say? Like, how would you advocate if you don't want to go out and hire lobbyists and go up and influence legislation, which I think is cool. It's a new passion of mine. If you don't want to do that, what are some other ways that you would recommend to our audience? Like, how do you tell your story so that your local, state House representative or state senator can see this and begin to be your advocate around the water cooler, where they're saying, we got to cut somewhere. Let's cut work-based earning. And they say, oh, no, you can't cut work-based earning. Here's why. Well, give me some pointers. How would you point people that way?
Well, first, I think most people might be a little bit stressed by that. I think it's encouraging. And the reason is what you should be focused on is in the problem. So for example, I talk about all the time with the blueprint, the no blueprint. And even at the end of an interview with somebody, if you're interviewing with a company, you could ask, is there anything I've said or anything, about this interview that might concern you? And if they're willing to tell you, like, okay, here's what's concerning us about, during this interview, it gives you one chance to say, okay, now I can hit all of your concerns and flip those no's to a yes. And so in this particular case, they're just saying, why, where's the value? Show us that, there's a return on the investment, or show us that that you guys are even making the investment worth it, regardless of return. And so for one, I think, we have to collect just more visual materials to build that social proof. It should be something that we could share digitally. I think that the other thing is a lot of districts will they'll kind of work in silos. I think it's important that we figure out how to work with our neighboring districts to make sure that we're building stuff that's strong. And then I think the most important thing to, in my opinion, is the economic impact. And if you can show a the legislators that, for every dollar you're putting in, our community's getting $4 back. If you can show that, working with us, like here's the return on that, then, that economic impact is going to have a voice as well. And so, if you were to bring in people to be lobbyist or aggressive, I think you're kind of sh shortcutting the whole problem. The reality is just, show your economic impact, build the stories, support your neighboring districts, and for any of this to be successful, your employers are going to have, they're going to have pretty good outcomes. And so, if you're doing things well, then that means your employers are happy. And when they're happy, then they will stand up and fight with you and for you, even if you can't. I just think that we all do a pretty good job putting out like short posts. Maybe every once in a while we drop a good video that kind of showcases it. But a peanut butter and jelly sandwich without, jelly, it's still good, but you gotta have both. And that data is the jelly that just makes it sweet.
Man, so many things there. So one, gosh, I don't even know if I'm gonna have the bandwidth to remember all of that. But one, you mentioned videos. Loved your Where Are They Now series. I'm probably gonna borrow that, take that. And if he hasn't checked, go check Mike on LinkedIn. He had a video a month or two ago where he basically featured a former work-based learning student who now in owns her own tattoo establishment, hired has 10 to 12 artists working for her. I mean, so just really cool. Just a real, and it wasn't like a long 30 minute long format interview. It wasn't a Joe Rogan podcast episode, right? It wasn't 5 hours. It was real short, real quick, asking fun questions, letting her tell her story. That's a great way. And so I would say, I mean, to answer my own question, I would say we have to do a good job of telling student stories. And so that's why when you mentioned about earlier in the intro, like, the awards, those awards, the sitting, that stuff doesn't move the needle for legislators, because that's typically going to be instructor focused, right? And I think there's value in that people who are giving those awards are seeing what we're discerning now as a viable means for that. But that doesn't move the needle with industry, and that doesn't really move the needle with legislators or other stakeholders. What moves me with them, and you mentioned economic impact, that's one of the first things that I started collecting is financial data, collecting my students' hours so I can see raw wages earned. Take that through a formula where you can determine economic impact, and go to your local, your county commissioner, your mayor, and say, hey, look, this is the economic engine that my program is in my community. So when things start getting cut, I need you to advocate and say, work returning can't be this, right? Because it's not just people, kids working part-time. These are pipelines being built to go into our local industries. And we've gone over that before, talking about the value of your tax dollars. Companies' tax dollars are paying the school system to build talent. So if those companies don't have a strategy to hire that talent, we can cut through all the red tape and just say what you're essentially doing is paying us to develop talent for your competitors to hire. And that's what it is. We start taking those stories about the 16-year-old who's now working in a fabrication facility, who was an ag mechanic student learning how to weld in Georgia. That's the pathway we go through that with. And they have a career, right? Or the student, we just have a student. I just got one of them, first time ever, super excited, hired with Georgia Power. They're starting in a week. That student now has a holistically different career trajectory now because he's on with one of the premier employers in all of Georgia. Tell those stories. And if every coordinator, if half the coordinators in your state can all share one story, that's a pretty strong amalgamation of success that we could communicate to industry. You mentioned like those videos, post those things on LinkedIn, right? Tell those stories. You mentioned one of my favorite things you said is let the no's become yeses. And one thing I learned from my good friend Stephen Casa is no's are blueprints to yeses. If you're like, hey, Van Ness, let's get together for lunch, right? And I'm like, Mike, I can't afford to fly out there, right? Then you say, well, and this is funny because I'll bring up a prior conversation like, hey, well, there's this golf course right next to me that you really want to play. How about you come out for a weekend and we can go play golf? And I say, no, Mike, I really can't afford that. Like, I'm telling you exactly what it is that's my barrier. I'm saying, Mike, I don't have the time and I can't afford that, right? And so if you can find a way to alleviate time and cost for me, then I don't have a reason to say no anymore. Now, if people continually say no, then they're just negative people. Move on and find a champion for your program. But when someone says, hey, Mike, I can't hire one of your kids, we can't hire kids who are 18. They've just given you a blueprint to turn a no into a yes. And that is, how do you show them that it is indeed legal to hire a student under 18? Or, Mike, I tell you what, man, we don't really have time to babysit a kid. That's the blueprint. That's the no. I can't babysit a kid. How do you, that's the blueprint to make it a yes. And so then you go into, maybe you have one of your current employers call them. Maybe you've already done and you've already created a resource for LinkedIn as part of your success stories. And you show that current employer the resource of a previous employer saying, here's why I'm not babysitting kids. Here's the actual valuable return on my investment. And so all of these answers kind of, or all these resources, but kind of answer all the questions. If you were developing these resources, excuse me, telling the proofs of concept, if you're sharing that, that becomes viable data to turn a no into a yes, because they've given you the blueprint. So you hit on a bunch of different things there that I think are so valuable that allow us. I mean, because again, this should be a cautionary tale to people across the country. If it gets to a place where Utah is having to fight to tell the story of work-based earning, it could happen to anybody. I mean, Utah is not like some newly established program where they don't have any longitudinal data, right? But we need more data, more success stories, wagging our own tail, having this stuff archived, sharing it, resharing your name. You mentioned partnership across districts. We shouldn't be fighting over kids and industries. And it really bothers me. And Georgia, at least in my region, we don't do it. But it really bothers me when I hear stories about someone saying, oh, you can't put a kid there. That's my employer. And I'm like, wait, What are we still capitalists or not? Like, you can't tell an employer who they can and can't hire. If an employer reaches out to me and I don't have a student to meet their needs, I'm reaching out to my neighboring and contiguous counties and their coordinators and saying, do you have someone who can meet this need? Because I want to be a yes person. I want them to associate me with solution to problems so that they'll continue to come back to me. And if I have the student, I give it to them. If I don't, I'm going to try and find a student in our neighboring county who can meet their needs. And that's how we tell those success stories. So thoughts on that?
I mean, first of all, yes, and yes. I don't know who you just gave credit to the no blueprint, but I want to challenge that one. I've been training on that since 2018. I think I took it nationally in 2020.
Man, I've never heard that. But so see, so he's a buddy of mine. He does work-based learning and runs a career academy, a BOCES up in New York. But he shared that in a presentation with me. We did a co-presentation, and yeah. So apologies.
That's how I got married in 2005 was the no blueprint, but I mean, I was like telling Jamie when I was like, why would you not want to marry me? She's like, you're short, you're pale, you're overweight. I'm like,
But
okay, so
did she know you could grow an awesome mustache?
these gray hairs coming out,
Did
she
she
didn't know at the
know?
time, no. But yeah, so I was like, so you just gave me the blueprint to get to set for you to say yes. And
It's
she's
so
like, well,
brilliant. It's so brilliant. It is a blueprint.
yeah.
Like, so now you should be encouraged when you leave a meeting and you get a no, because I'm like, you just told me exactly what I have to
Yeah.
communicate to get a yes. And again, if they continue to say no, then they're just negative. They're never going to get on board. Give your talent with their
Yeah.
competitor and make them regret that.
Well, that's been my mindset since I was young. And I think every single district, if there's anybody that is listening to this, we the word no, it comes with a little bit of anxiety because we want something. That's why we're asking for it.
Yeah.
And of course we want them to say yes. Well, that right there, if you can just get comfortable understanding the no,
Yeah.
then they are literally telling you exactly what you need to do to flip it to a yes. And
Yeah.
so my approach has always been, I'll go to a partner that maybe they work with us for guest speaking, they might help us out with
Yeah.
some career fairs, but they don't want to really take on interns or apprentices.
Yeah.
And so I'll talk to them, I'll say, look, I'm not going to hit you up. And that way it makes it nice and natural. And they're just going to tell you, because they're like, well, I got no skin in the game on this one. And,
Yeah.
but if you could just tell me why the industry's,
Industry.
hesitant, then industry. Yeah. So we have, for years we've, yes, then I can go open doors. And so that's when we came up with that nationally. They were saying, look, Mike, they've got to get
Yeah.
HIPAA. And
Yeah.
so I took that and I ran with it. And now every single one of our students comes out of my program nationally HIPAA certified for 2 years,
Absolutely.
has reciprocity across all 50 states. And so if you can get over the anxiety of it, then it's really the best thing you could ever hear, as
Absolutely.
long as you're asking the right question.
Absolutely. And you said something else that made me think of something that I learned from Peter Hofstrasser. And he said that what they do in their community, again, one of those things that's happened since our last episode is he said, if you're a vendor of our school system, we will not accept a vendor application from them unless they agree to hire an apprentice or an intern.
Wow.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So
That's
you want to
pretty
be a
cool.
vendor, you want to access the federal funding that comes through schools, then you have to sign the dotted line that you will take and accept an apprentice or an intern. Now, we may
That's
not
pretty
have one for
cool.
you all the time, but you need to do that. And if you don't do that, then we won't consider your application for RFPs or RFIs or whatever else moving forward. I thought that was brilliant. So there's a strategy that I heard him talk about before. It's absolutely brilliant. So that's kind of where work-based learning stands now for you. Georgia is under, we're going through a lot of changes right now. A lot of it centers on data and gosh, I don't even know. I don't even want to open that can of worms because it's still a little fresh. It's still a little raw. But we're trying to find a new software solution. There's one in place. I don't know that that's the long-term answer. I'm glad that it's not my decision to make that decision. But it points back to what you're saying is, I don't know that I like the current solution, but what I do like is that the people at our Department of Education see the value in collecting data to communicate those stories of success.
Yeah.
And I'm a super loyal employer or employee. I don't have to necessarily agree on everything that my employers do or decide. I try to look beyond that and say, hey, look, it's not my decision to pick the software. I do definitely have a preference for one over the other, but what I can value is that you see the need to collect the data to tell the story. But there's like I said, that's one of the things that we're going through in Georgia. So where it stands now, like let's talk just briefly as we kind of approach the end of this episode and just tell our audience kind of what they can expect from us moving forward. And again, like I said, your involvement in this is going to either be as a co-host or if as you transition out, maybe it's just coming on and being a guest when you can. We're open to that and excited about that. But some things that we had talked about, and I have a list just because I don't know that my memory is as good as it used to be. But some things that have started to trend in work-based learning since our last episode. So you just talked about partnerships and telling the story, collecting data, not just to industry, but also to legislators. I think super valuable. And I would say that we didn't necessarily pick that. We didn't pick that to be the lead-in topic. But if I, looking back on it, if I did go through these topics, I would have picked that one to come out first. So I'm glad I did. One of the most important. But a couple of other things, and I think that covers a couple on our list. The employers sharpening their focus on return on investment. If we continue to use the language and talk to employers about, hey, you're paying us to develop talent, so you might as well partner with us and onboard this talent and get some return on investment. Maybe leverage that early access to talent, to talent retention, talent pipeline development. Once you've done that, then now you're actually getting a return on what we call as a sunken cost. We've talked about that. So, and seeing the value of interns and apprentices, I do have a topic that you and I talked about from moving forward is what is it? How do you define the difference between intern and apprentice? And you talk about brands. So I don't want to spoil that. We'll get to that in a future episode, but AI. Are you using it in your program, your work-based learning program? So, and these are just topics for maybe future consideration of episodes, but something, this was not a thing when we are after our last episode. And in the year since we've posted episode, this has become not only the thing or a thing, but the thing. And I did a presentation at the National Work-Based Learning Conference on how I'm using AI in work-based learning. Any developments there for you?
Yeah, I mean, our district just came out with a policy last week, which I was grateful for. And so we're in the test phase. I think it's huge. I think I mean I think AI is going to play a huge part in many things, but we definitely can't shy away from it. And I appreciate that our district's willing to tackle this and say, okay, we're gonna start making policy, we're gonna play with this. I believe it was just I believe it was 155 jobs last year in Utah. That was a specific requirement for the job. And so, and it really boiled down to, could you even communicate, with sort things like ChatGPT, et cetera. Just using
How do you write a
ChatGPT.
prompt?
Yeah,
How do you
how to prompt
steer
it
it toward
correctly.
resources to give you data and to fence off resources that you don't want? A great point.
How to build charts and do things. And so if there's just 155, I believe I want to say that was the number. If there's just jobs just saying that you need to understand AI prompts, then it's something that we need to be putting in place and getting to a lot quicker here. The other thing, reason I'm a huge advocate of AI, when it comes to just kind of getting students ready, is I think everyone agrees that it's a different brand of students since COVID.
Absolutely.
Things have changed, and so I need to spend a little bit more time polishing just like the other stuff, the durability skills, not the soft skills, Jason. I just made him
Oh
shiver.
gosh.
But
We'll get to that in a second. So I
go
appreciate
read
you bringing that.
Jason's his article on his page about that. He's Jason's very passionate,
Well,
and
that article
so
will drop. It'll drop October 29. So it's the penultimate
oh.
article. It hasn't dropped yet. You've read it. It's
That's
the
right.
penultimate
Sorry.
article in the series, but
And so it's coming. But seriously, I mean, I looked at this. I've got so many hours in my job, and so does any other work-based learning person in America. You really can't generate more hours. And if you do, you're taking those hours from someone else, whether it's your family, your children, etc.
Oh, great
And
point.
so if there's a new style of student coming through, that's okay. we can work with that, but you know, we can't, but there's no more money. We can't just keep hiring people to do things. And so using AI to help generate the resume type stuff, help do the job searching type stuff, help doing those type of things, the digital portfolio work, so that we can spend more time focusing on the durability skills, the human skills, just getting them ready. You know, their communication skills, then we can still have a really good product at the same price.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
so I think every district in America should be trying to find ways to integrate it, so it can alleviate some pressure, and then also then reinvest that time into the student versus just, you know, all the stuff around. And so to me, when it comes to work-based learning, I think the AI world, as a whole is going to be huge in our ability to develop their talent.
Yeah, I agree. And I found some pretty, I think are unique ways. And you know, so I'll get at that just briefly, but basically I use AI, and if you're a follower of the podcast, you've already seen the audio and the slide deck, you know, put on our podcast stream from that conference out in Seattle. But I talked about apprenticeship and AI and how it's the future. And I don't want to spin the bullet, to spend an ask, so to speak, and have my employers come in and do mock interviews because the juice isn't worth the squeeze. It's good training, but those mock interviews rarely ever lead to hiring someone, rarely ever lead to partnerships. And so what I have been able to do is I've used AI to go in and to build a bot that will mock interview my students. And you know, I've used the bluff, the bottom line up front method as the epistemology for which the AI bot's going to reference their responses, and the STAR method, which is oh my gosh, situation, task, action, result. And so basically my AI bot is building is it's referencing their responses on that. And so you could come in and say something simple like, hey, I interview me as for an entry-level position as a CNA. And then the AI bot will go out and gather those resources and begin to ask them questions and give them feedback based on the bluff and the STAR method, but it's actually content specific questions. Or they can say, that's on a general interview for any job. Like, what are some questions I can ask? And so I'm not giving them a handout or a slide deck that says, here are the top five interview questions. Like, kids don't want that. But they can go in whenever they want, scan the QR code, go into my bot, do the interview, and I can go in and see their responses. And then I can go back in and specifically task and give feedback on these and say, hey, look, you're not really getting this question. It's asking for this. You keep saying this. And then just have them practice. Do one of these a month, and I can go in and see that. So really cool ways that you can use AI, especially if you're getting into there's another software that I use called CuriePod. I know you do a lot of this, so maybe cool for you is going into the elementary and middle schools and doing recruiting events, right? Well, CuriePod, you can go in and say, you know, build me a slide deck to introduce fifth graders to careers in architecture, in welding, in auto mechanics, in construction, and it'll go in and build you a slide deck. Because I'm not a construction expert, right? But I can use CuriePod and AI to go out and source the information to build me a slide deck, and it'll actually get good content. I can go in and I can adjust the content, but it also builds in these games, you know, where kids can they can use their device to. You know, it'll be like, you know, I did one for engineering just as an example. And then one of the brain breaks for them is to draw a roller coaster on their computer, right? And so it's just a brain break, but it's using the content for the brain break. And the other one is, I mean, so just a lot of really fun things. So we'll do a whole episode on this. Maybe we can demo some of those things. But a couple of things for our audience as we close up is future topics. First, we're gonna have Dr. Chelsea Morelli. We're gonna finish that. That year and a half long series on special education and work-based learning, you know, and I believe it was Mr. Dr. Allen, is that right? Your contact was the first episode, and then David Richardson came. Melanie Allen, I believe, is who it was.
Melanie.
Yeah, and then so I don't want to short her title if it's doctor. I apologize, but Dr. or Mrs. Allen, and then we had David Richardson come back and talk about that. And then Dr. Morelli is going to come in. She's a professor at University of North Georgia, and she teaches special education, teaches future special ed teachers. And so she's going to kind of examine that content. We'll have a discussion on the value of work-based learning in terms of building out, you know, transition plans and all this kind of stuff. So really cool. We'll finish that series out and then we'll go into things, maybe AI, maybe how do you vet a work-based learning student? We talked about that. You know, how do you vet them versus how I vet them? How states require to vet them? How do you identify an intern versus an apprentice? What's the difference quantitatively, qualitatively? Go through my article series, maybe we talked about that, the CTE's word problem. You know, I'm doing a whole series right now on LinkedIn. If anybody's interested, you can go and read those. It's a bi-weekly series where we're looking at a specific word that's used in CTE that I think is very harmful, detrimental. The ones that have posted so far are underemployed. Gosh, what was the first one? I can't remember now. I'm being scatterbrained, but future ones to come are soft skills. I hate that term. Actually looking at the value of the term career tech ed, CTE, is that even valuable anymore? Why do we call our classes elective classes? You know, all these things, there's seven articles in there, including the introduction, and it's really bothered me the first. Oh yeah. I did one on student frames. And I'm like, how do you look at your student? Do you look at your student as our work-based learning student as a product, as a customer? Do you treat them as a client or as a stakeholder? I looked at those four frames and those things. So we've taken a break from podcasting, but we haven't taken a break from trying to change the world, the educational system, right? And make people see the value of career tech ed through work-based learning. So we haven't recorded episodes on this, but that doesn't mean we haven't been doing work. We're probably going to bring on Christy Gillespie at some point. I can almost guarantee it, talking about her edu-vitality system, which I think is really unique. And then look at social capital. I don't even know that we've done an episode on my reverse career fair. And I've spoken on that everywhere else, but so just some things that are coming. We have a list of topics in the pipeline we'll be recording and putting out for our listeners. Let us know if you want a specific topic. We can go in and do that again. Mike, that's all I've got, man. It was great seeing you. I guess we'll kind of close with our call to action. Like keep fighting the good fight. You know, keep being your student's advocate to industry. Share your story, wag your tail. And consider how you can move these stories from school to industry to school to legislators. You know, have a strategy for that. Maybe you and I can do some more things on that. So that's it. Our comeback. It's officially begun. Any thoughts you want to close us out, Mike, and just kind of walk us through this, and then we'll get on with our days.
Well, like I said, this is the farewell, the last dance. You know, I just want to say that there are so many things happening as I've reflected, you know, the almost decade I've spent doing work-based learning now. And I just my biggest plea to anyone who's listening, as I've started to kind of look back at the things, I thought that was a cool story, that was a cool experience. And I've gone back and I just don't have those things saved. And so I would recommend that, you know, starting today, that you add a couple questions to your student surveys when it comes to the economic impact series. I suggest that you create a folder and start just collecting stuff and just having it as a time capsule for your program.
Yeah.
Because I believe the day will come where you're going to have to justify to somebody, you know, what it is that you do. And I just think, you know, you know, putting all this into a time capsule and just saying this is where it was and this is where it's going, I think is going to pay itself back, you know, tenfold. And so, you know, just get in the habit of collecting and keeping those things. And I can't wait for the next series.
Yeah, man, I'm super excited about that too. And just so everybody knows, my attempt to do that is starting in a week with the 31 and 31 series that I post to a different student at a different employer every day of the week, every day of the month for October. So it's 31 students, 31 different employers over 31 days. And it's the most exhausting thing I've ever done. And I'm sure you're tired of get seeing it on LinkedIn. But if any employers ever come or any industry or partners or my admin come to me and say, what are you doing? I've got 4 years now of the 31-31 campaign. I can go and say, this is what I'm doing every year. These are the kids every single year. These are the kids and what they're doing. Here are the industries that we're servicing. Here are the opportunities that kids are realizing. So, my attempt to do that, man, great advice. We will call it a day. Thank you to everybody. Thank you, Mike, for coming on. Thank you for
Hey,
sharing
thank
that
you.
amazing mustache with us. It is legit, legit. Yeah, we'll catch back. Our next episode is going to be with Dr. Morelli, finishing up our special education series. And then we'll move into some new topics. So Everybody have a great day.
Hey,
Thanks, Mike.
thank you.